Understand the point, and I guess the questions I have, which, you know, could well be answered on the floor, is why couldn't we just leave out the change in the civil rules? You know, I mean, I don't still understand why it's critical, that time period's critical, but it may be because I'm missing something. What would happen if we just left that out?
Well, by providing for a longer period for jurors on the answer, you are doing something that the civil rules, outside the civil rules, it would be possible to amend this section 3 by saying has the effect of amending the civil rules by allowing a longer period of time. It might be clearer that way. And I'd be happy to do that.
I'm not certain it's necessary, Ms. Chairman. I'll try to spend some more time trying to understand this before it reaches the floor. I'm sure what you say is correct.
Okay. What is the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we pass this bill on to rules, I assume, with individual recommendations and zero fiscal votes.
Motion to move as described. Is your objection? Not. The bill is moved.
My thanks.
Next, HB 242, Uniform Interstate Family Support Act. Get the sign up here. And the first person we have is Glenda Straub. Glenda, welcome.
Thank you. Glenda Straub, Director of Child Support Enforcement. We're on 115, correct?
No.
I mean, 242, that's right. Okay, I'm getting mixed up here. 242, got it. This is the Uniform Interstate Family Support Act. For child support enforcement, the most difficult cases for us to collect on are interstate cases, and that's 44% of our caseload. Most non-custodial parents know that crossing state lines is the best way to avoid paying child support. This would provide a tremendous tool for us to collect in those cases. The UFSA, is what we call it, has been passed already by at least 21 states, and is in the legislature in many more states being considered right now. It is also part of, as is 244, part of the Personal Responsibility Act, which passed out of the House in Congress recently. The most important part of this bill is that it would eliminate the multiple order system existing under current law. Right now, we're faced with people who come to us that one party's got a California order, another party's got an order from Mississippi, then they're in Alaska, and it's really a mess. And then it really is, in a sense, up to our discretion to choose, and we don't like to be in that position. Better than across the country, there'd be only one jurisdiction, what they call continuing exclusive jurisdiction, and that's where the order comes from, that's where the modifications stay, that's where all the work is done. So this bill would take care of that problem. It also does all kinds of things administratively to make it easier to do our work. We will, with this act, be using the same federal forms in all interstate cases. This will also provide a long-arm jurisdiction to reach out-of-state obligors. And it allows direct income withholding in another state. Right now, I'm sure many of you get complaints from custodial parents, who, and probably most of them come from custodial parents whose obligor is out of state. And we have to go through the other state through a very long process, and we get on their long list, and maybe we're not their priority. Our children aren't their priority. And it takes a very long time before they'll go out and go to the employer and withhold some money for the children. This would allow direct income withholding. This would also, there is no additional operating expenditures for this bill. However, we expect that in the first full year, we will be able to collect $340,000 per year just to reimburse the state's share of AFDC. That's $340,000 to the, I guess you could say, the general fund. Meanwhile, we usually do about a double amount, $680,000 around that per year, that go directly to the children. So we're talking about a a lot more collections, a lot more to help reimburse the FDC for the cost of the FDC, and a lot more money directly to the children who deserve this money and this support. There are other people here that are, I hate to admit, more technically knowledgeable about this bill. So they're also available, but I'm available for any questions you might have.
President Tilley?
I don't necessarily have a question, but I would like to state that in the 3 years that I've been here, I really appreciate, we get a lot of calls on primarily from fathers who think they've been wronged. And I really appreciate the way you've handled that, because you have brought them into the system, and you've explained how they have not, most of the time, not been wrong. And you always send me a copy, and I really appreciate that, because I have to deal with these people. And
we are also meeting. Thank you. We're also meeting with Obligor representatives, so we've been doing that for months now.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm sorry, Ms. Straube?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Ms. Straube. This whole bill comes from a Uniform Act, from the Uniform Law Commission, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think we should have what is in the HESC Committee Substitute Section 6, which, in essence, provides an exemption for this law from Civil Rule Procedure 79 and 82?
Yes, sir. Come on.
Well, we can talk about rules, but I guess I'll just ask you, why do you think under this area of law we should give people different consideration in court in terms of getting their attorney fees, if they are the prevailing party, I assume, as opposed to other areas of the law where we have Rule 79 or Rule 82?
Again, I would rather that Marilyn May from the AG's office answer that, because I'm not as familiar with the other laws.
So you don't really have an opinion one way or the other on it?
I would if I were more educated. Good answer.
No scarcity of opinions around here.
Linda, thank you very much.
Okay.
Well?
Good afternoon. I'm Marilyn May, Assistant Attorney General from the Alaska Department of Law. And I'm just here to answer questions. The first one from Representative Vesey was about the attorney's fees. I'm looking, there it is, okay. It's on page 13 of the committee substitute, I think, for House Bill 242 at line 15. And what this section does is it says, first of all, that a petitioner who files a petition under this chapter does not have to pay a filing fee or other costs. A petitioner could be either an obligor or an obligee. It's the person who is seeking some kind of relief, and that may be someone who's seeking to have a support order either adopted or enforced or modified either up or down. So that could be either an obligor or an obligee, whoever it is that files the petition would not have to pay filing fees under A. And under B it says that if an obligee prevails, that costs and fees may be assessed against the obligor. And I assume that what you were referring to about the difference in the way that it's treated is that it also says the tribunal may not assess fees, costs, or expenses against the obligee or the support enforcement agency, except as required by other law or court rule. I don't know specifically why the Uniform Law Commissioners originally adopted that concept. I assume it's I really don't know. I don't know why that was done, but it was done without consideration of the way that attorney's fees are assessed in Alaska. And in Alaska, there are other laws or court rules that provide for the assessment of costs and fees in favor of the prevailing party. So, in fact, this language would not probably change the way Alaska already does it. In other states, it would be true that a prevailing obligor could not get costs and fees against an obligee or the support enforcement agency. But since in Alaska there is other law or court rule that allows for that, then most likely they could actually get costs and fees.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name.
Marilyn May.
Ms. May. Okay, so what we're doing here, and I was in Section 6 on page 26, and you went back to page 13, which I'm not even sure which section, Section 1 or 2, I'm Section 3, I guess. And it provides that a tribunal, and I'm not sure how we're finding tribunal here, because that doesn't sound...
That's either a court or the agency, because this act allows...
may not require filing fees. So we're going to let these people with these type of complaints into the court system with no filing fee. And that's the recommendation coming down from National. But do you know how many states have adopted that provision?
23 states as of last
Friday. Adopted the provision of no filing fees.
I don't know. I could probably find that out, but I don't have that information at my fingertips.
And you're not sure that this paragraph B would have any effect on current law because of the statement in here that the tribunal may not assess fees, costs, or expenses of either the initiating party except as required by the law or court rule.
That's correct. I think that person might argue under that, for instance, under Rule 82, that attorney's fees are not necessarily required in favor of a prevailing party because it does allow for some discretion in the court. But, in fact, in Alaska, there is this provision, and in most cases, attorney's fees are awarded to the prevailing party.
Ms. Chair, if I may. I strongly support overhauling Rule 79 and Rule 82. But I don't support just doing it piecemeal through our statutes, just one area of law and then not other areas of law. I think if we're going to do it, we should do it across the board to apply it equally.
Actually, if it is correct that under B, because of Alaska's existing system, that this doesn't really change our attorney's fees rules, which are 79 is the cost rule and 82 is the attorney's fees rule, and I think that most likely this language would not affect that.
Well, except
then there isn't the difference. The filing fee one is under Administrative Rule 9, which the court has already amended.
Okay. Any reason? It does on in Section 6 to say that we are amending Rules 79 and 82.
Yes, that's...
So that would say that we're going to delete those and substitute this.
Well,
that would be it.
I think it's actually what was referred to earlier. That's the drafting language that is always used whenever there is... any effect or any, I guess effect is the best word I can think of, on a civil rule or any reference to a civil rule. I don't actually think that this does amend it, but because it relates to 79 and 82, they always, I guess, just put that in there.
Is that easy? Well, I strongly disagree because I don't think it would have a lot of effect if we didn't have Section 6, but when we put in Section 6 that we are amending Rule 79 and 82, so if this may be imposed, then 7982 go out the door, and this becomes law.
Well, what the law says is that we're not changing Rule 82.
Well, the other thing I guess I didn't discuss was...
Section 3 has the effect of amending Alaska Rules of Procedure 7982. That's what Section 6 says.
What is 79?
That's the cost. The rule that allows costs to be assessed against it.
We are amending 79.
Well, actually, the other thing is that C, on page 13 at line 28, C says that this is really where the amendment would be, that the tribunal shall order the payment of costs and reasonable attorney's fees, including filing fees that were waived under A of this section, by a party who requests a hearing under this chapter, if it determines that the hearing was requested primarily for delay. So that, I guess, is where the amendment really comes in, because Rule 82 doesn't require that. Under Rule 82, I think most judges might well apply Rule 82 and Rule 79 to do this anyway, but it's not required as it is here.
Rule 82 would generally result in a portion of attorney's fees, and what this is saying is implies is all reasonable attorney fees, isn't it?
That's correct.
It isn't, it?
Although, yes, that's right. And Rule 82 does allow for the court in its own discretion to order for reasonable attorney's fees, but it is mandated by this language, so that would be the amendment, I think.
Any other questions about it? Well, Darrell, thank you very much. Stu Hall? Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Stuart Hall, State Ombudsman. The Ombudsman's office is in strong support of this legislation, House Bill 242, and its companion measure in the Senate. An act under WIPSA would assist many who have sought the Ombudsman's help with the Alaska Child Support Enforcement Division. In fiscal year 1994 and 1995 to date, the Ombudsman has assisted almost 1,700 individuals with complaints against CSED, many of whom are custodial parents who depend upon the division to collect child support from an out-of-state parent. Now, Mrs. Stradley said that she thought 44% of her caseload reflected out-of-state or interstate ramifications. I suspect of ours, our caseload management system doesn't identify that, but I suspect it's significantly more than that. Because a large number of those complaints that we see and hear from are single parents concerned about the slow pace of case establishment on child support collection, and that occurs most typically in situations where there is an out-of-state obligor. under the present system where you can have multiple support orders and where you cannot take an Alaska order and go directly to the employer to collect that support. It is a very time-consuming process under the existing Uniform Act known as ERISA, the Uniform Reciprocal Enforcement of Support Act. We think that enactment of ERISA would streamline the establishment process and in turn should prompt speedier collections. It'll do two things. It'll eliminate these multiple orders and allow, my staff has asked me especially to tell you, it will allow CSED to deal directly with employers in other states. And that, those are two very important changes in the law that we think will streamline the law and benefit the Alaskan kids. Certainly, everyone. I just would make one observation about the rules of procedure. It's been a while since I've been drafting bills, and more years ago than I'd like to remember. But my recollection is, and Mrs. Carpenter will correct me, is that the Alaska Constitution, which gives the courts the right to establish the rules of procedure, doesn't preclude the legislature from doing so, but says that if they do amend or change a rule of court, that they have to identify it in the title and that you get the kind of boilerplate language that appears in Section 6 of the bill. Art Peterson, who was for so many years reviser of statutes, is not here. He is a member of the National, one of the commissioners on uniform state laws, and he can address that and answer your question, I think, very specifically, since he wrote the drafting manual on legislative, for legislation and also for administrative regulations. But I think that that is a fairly accurate summary of why that language is the way it is.
Hey, Mr. Hall. For the information of the committee, Art Peterson did have to leave. He is with the National Commission of Uniform State Law. He supports the legislation. Is there anyone else that wishes to give testimony on HB 242? Then we'll close the public hearing. Mr. Which committee, or is any busy?
Mr. Chairman, I'd propose an amendment that would delete Section 6.
Marilyn or Glenda, the HESS substitute doesn't change the title of the act?
Yes, what it did was took out the reference to Administrative Rule 9, both in the title, and I believe it was originally Section 6 or 7.
I don't want you to ask the question.
The HESS committee substitute doesn't change the title of the Interstate Family Support Act, as the original bill did. Was that intentional?
Okay.
Do you mean this
on the original?
It took out the reference.
No, I don't mean that title. I don't mean that title. I mean underneath, after the bill starts in Section 1, the original bill said change the name of the Uniform Interstate Family Support Act from ERISA.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the CS does not.
Oh. Oh, I think that must be a mistake.
Okay.
Yeah, it seems to have fallen out somewhere. There was no amendment to that on
the
HESS.
Was there any
fitness there? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the amendment before us is amendment to delete Section 6?
Well, I'm going to ask that to be held for right now until we get this title from straight up.
My understanding is that the title, the lines 6 and 7 on the original bill that said Chapter 25 and then gave the title, that should be in there. Yeah, I think that was a mistake when it was.
Okay, we'll consider that as a subsequent amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Vizi, your amendment was.
Chairman, you need to adopt
the CS. No, the HESS CS isn't. Representative Vizi?
I move that we amendment number one that we delete Section 6, found on page 26, line 11 through 13.
And a motion to repeal amendment number one to delete Section 6.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Finkelstein?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think it would make much sense. It would have the effect as if this went onto the floor and the requisite votes weren't provided for the court rule. But without Section 6 in it, we won't have that vote on whether to change the court rules, but we will have a statute that conflicts with the court rules. It's almost sort of a drafting thing. Section 6 just states the obvious that this conflicts with the court rules.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If Amendment Number 6 is adopted by this committee, then I would propose an amendment modifying the section on page 13 described as Alaska Statute 25-25-313, so that it would not conflict.
Well, so if I can, for clarification, what you're really getting at is that you'd like to stay with Rule 82 and 79 instead of provisions on page 13.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, what I'd like to do is do a blanket change of Rule 79 and 82 and not just
I realize that, but for short of that,
yes,
you would be returning.
Chairman, should that be one motion or one amendment?
I think it could be, but...
Mr. Chairman, I wasn't sure that my amendment would pass. The amendment made it fairly simple. If it passes, we could work on amending other sections. Yeah. A little more complicated. But
okay. I guess, while I sympathize with the philosophy, for this particular purpose, I don't have great objection, so I'll object. Is there a... Could we have a roll call vote on amendment number one, which is removing...
Before you take the vote, is there anyone that want to speak to this deletion that's here representing the agency?
Well...
Thank you. I just wanted to note that the few very minor changes that have been made thus far from the language of the Uniform Act have been, Art Peterson ran them specifically by the Uniform Commissioners, and they were approved. And the purpose of having a Uniform Act is to make things as nearly the same in every state as possible. I don't know whether that would be a change that is so substantive that the Uniform Law Commissioners would now consider this not to be complying with the Uniform Law, but that would be the concern. And also, it's the change is so minor to what the current rule under Alaska Rule 79 and Rule 82 that it doesn't. I don't think taking this out makes a very substantial difference in what Alaska's current law is. It does in other states. In other states that don't have Rule 79 and Rule 82, this is a really big deal because it gives one party a right to attorney's fees. But in our state, both sides have this possible right to attorney's fees. So it does operate to amend 79 and 82, but it's a very minor change that the court already has the authority to do this. So I guess I don't think it's a very good idea because it then conflicts with Uniform Law. Also, I don't remember if Ms. Strawby testified to this, but the U.S. Congress is looking at, I don't think it's passed all the way through, but I think the House has passed a bill that mandates the adoption of UFSA by all states as part of the welfare reform movement that's going on there. And again, the problem is how far away you can drift from the Uniform Law and still meet those requirements and be able to get the federal funding. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. We have a roll call vote on amendment number one, please.
Representative Finkelstein?
No.
Representative Tui?
Yes.
Representative Beese?
Yes.
Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Bundy?
No.
Representative Green?
No.
Representative Porter?
No. Amendment number one fails. I would entertain amendment number two to replace the language in the CS that was taken out of the original bill that addresses the change in the definition of the act on page one. I thought that would be enough to identify it. Well, it isn't a title amendment to the bill. It's the amendment to the title of the act that is within the bill. Yeah.
I understand, and I second.
Have a motion to move as I've just ineptly described. Is there an objection? If not, that is adopted. Any further discussion? Representative Tui, it's your turn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that we pass this bill out, CS House Bill 242, onto its next committee of the floor, which is financed with its zero fiscal note, individual recommendation.
Motion to move as described. Is there objection? Not, the bill is moved. Now, the next bill for consideration is HB 244.
I sure would like, Mr. Chairman, may I make a comment?
May I make a comment?
I would really like to have them substitute the word tribunal. This does really give a whole new connotation of to me. I think it's a very poor word.
Oh, find another word?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Tribunal denotes to me Roman gladiators thing. Well, that was the intent. It just
does
not go with child enforcement.
But you can't say court because there's also other kinds of entities that might be
administrative and others, rather than tribunal. It just denotes making these slush
and
slush.
Okay. Thank
you, sir. Mr. Chairman, I cast in the word tribunal, too, because I believe that the definition is a adjudication by a group of three. I could be wrong about that. It's a common term, but I thought it referred to a three-judge panel.
In any event, We have Brenda Strawley back on HB 244.
Hi. Brenda, it's just a few seconds ago, I'm still the director of child support enforcement. Was this We can only know how long that, if we only knew how long that could last. Anyways, this is about the administrative establishment of paternity. New federal guidelines require that 75% of all child support orders be established within 6 months of us getting the case or the information. Before we can establish an order, we must establish paternity. So what that really means is that we have to establish paternity and establish the order within 6 months. And because of court backlogs, it often takes them 6 months just to get to the paperwork and rubber stamp what we've done. So obviously we can shave off 6 months of the process if we were able to administratively establish paternity. We would use the same standards as the court does now and the same standards we use to even send the cases to the court. We would provide due process, those affected, with informal conference, formal conference, and judicial review if they so desire. Basically, again, we are just faced with a really horrible dilemma of trying to live within federal timelines and the process just taking way too long. We believe for a yearly general fund investment of approximately $73,000, we can bring in $850,000 per year in our share of AFDC reimbursements to the state. As far as the fiscal note goes, all the costs of any of our programs are paid for by the federal government. They have also, Congress has been, at least the House, we don't know what the Senate's going to do, has also been asking for states to take a look at finding a more administrative processes that will speed up everything as opposed to having the courts do it. The one last item that's in here that's real important, which of course I always hate to bring up, is that right now, if a child is born in wedlock, and you have the husband and wife both say that the child is not the husband's, and you have a third party who says that the child is mine, and they all three agree, they have to go to court right now. They can't do affidavits. They have to go to court to do that, to change paternity. And this would allow us to accept the affidavits of all three parties involved as to who the real father is. It happens enough for it to be a big deal to some people. I don't know, maybe not your constituents, but we do hear from legislators about it, from their constituents. So it is an issue, yeah. How many times, I don't really know, but I do know it comes up. People fooling around, it's disgusting. I don't know what to say about it.
What are friends for?
Anyways, if there's any...
What are
conscience
for?
If you have any questions, we'd
be
glad to answer them.
Before we go too far down that road, are there any questions of Brenda? If not, Brenda, thank you very much. Well, anything to add?
We'll see you in a
minute. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The only thing I wanted to add is that Alaska is one of the states which has an administrative process for some portions of the child support enforcement system, and it's working quite well. It's my understanding is that when this has been discussed with obligor groups, they're in favor of having administrative establishment of paternity so that they don't have to go through the court system. And I think that's all I had to say. Are there any questions?
I see no questions. Thank you very much. Perhaps because of the lateness of the hour, but in any event, is there anyone else who wishes to give testimony on HB 244? If not, we'll close the public hearing. Representative Davies.
I'd like to move House Bill 244 out of the committee with the individual recommendation.
That was my turn.
Now, this is Betty's area of expertise.
That's right.
Showed the bill last year. So we have had a motion by Representative Davis to move this bill as described. Is there objection? No?